Hello, this is Dr. Parker Wilson, and this is the topic of the basics of modern psychotherapy. We can begin by laying down some basic conceptualizations of some aspects of human psychology. The first is emotional hooks and limits. What I mean by this is the ways in which we become very wrapped up in, all caught up in, overwhelmed with, very reactive to our own emotions and our own thoughts, judgments and opinions, things like that. So we can have a thought arise in our mind, have an emotion occur based on some kind of trigger outside of us usually. You know, some person, place, or thing around us makes us feel or think something. And most of us get very, very wrapped up in that thinking and feeling. Believing that we are what we think and feel. Believing that those thoughts and those feelings are reality. We identify with those things. We become one with those things. And this is apparent even in our language. When we say, I am angry, or I am anger, I am depressed, I am certain things. You know, I am that feeling. And this is just not the case in actuality. In actuality, we have many different thoughts and emotions that constantly ebb and flow in our minds throughout the course of each and every day. The mind is constantly churning and is very impermanent. Everything that arises in the mind, every thought and emotion, will pass and does pass rather quickly, actually. So that it really is actually quite impossible, if you slow it down and look at it closely, it's very impossible to feel one way for any particular length of time, to maintain any kind of emotion or any kind of thought, any kind of belief or judgment or opinion for any long period of time. These things are simply impermanent. But the problem is that we get very identified with these rather impermanent, transient mental phenomena. And we believe somehow that our thoughts and emotions are very, very permanent and very inherent, and that we are these thoughts and emotions. We are what we think. We are what we feel. And because we believe that, we become very reactive. And when you get highly reactive to thoughts and emotions that you're experiencing, that becomes a problem. It becomes a problem particularly around negative or afflictive emotions. So if someone dies that we love, or if we become sick, or someone we care about is diagnosed with an illness, or we look in the mirror and see the effects of aging, and we turn 35 and 45 and 55, we can become very reactive to that stimulus. We can become depressed. We can become anxious, stressful, lonely. Any number of afflictive emotions can take place. We can experience loss and grief. And if we identify with, and we're all caught up in those emotions as if they're a reality for us, then it starts to really degrade and destroy the quality of our life, the quality of our mind. And so those are the ideas of hooks and limits. For instance, my grandmother has an emotional limit. If I walk into her apartment and move any of the pictures that are around there, move any of her figurines and things she has around her condominium and such, she becomes very reactive to that. That's a limit for her. She's almost 90 years old and there's only so much she can control, but damn, she's going to control where she lives and how things are and things like that. So if I make the mistake of picking up a picture and putting it back down on the dresser and it's not exactly in the right place, I'm going to hear about it. She'll get irritated. She'll get upset with that rather quickly. And so those are hooks and limits. And the idea of mindfulness comes into play here. And so does the idea of introspection in psychotherapy. Because it is by learning to get some space between us and all the things that we think and feel, all the things that we judge, that we have opinions about, that we have beliefs about, that we have memories about, and dreams and fantasies. All of these things are mental phenomena. So you are able to cultivate some space with techniques like mindfulness and also with basic introspection that psychotherapy teaches a client. you're able to get some space between you and all the things that you think and feel and believe and judge and so on. And this is quite useful because when you cease to be all wrapped up in things, when you cease to be so identified with every mental phenomena that rolls through your head, then you actually have some perspective on things. Then you can actually learn to work with things. You can actually learn to give some space to moments of depression, moments of loss. You can learn to abide with these things. And you can see quite clearly that they pass. They come and go. They ebb and flow. And you can also begin to manipulate your emotional states. And that if you notice that you're experiencing depression, say, or loneliness, or grief, or loss, you can abide with that feeling. And then, slowly, intellectually, remind yourself of various things that may counteract the loneliness, that may counteract the depression. So in essence, you become your own therapist after a while. The next topic is exit doors. These are the ways that we exit our experience. So when we have, when we've been hooked by an emotion or a thought, when we've reached an emotional limit, we usually seek an escape. Reaching an emotional limit is kind of like being overwhelmed. And so when we're overwhelmed with grief or loss or depression or loneliness or anxiety or what have you, typically we seek an exit from that. And in my experience as a psychotherapist and a doctor of psychology, I've seen people exit in three primary ways, or three primary classifications of exit doors. The first one is called numbing out. We tend to seek escape in oblivion, this temporary but intense distraction. Of course, drugs and alcohol fall into this category, as do many other intense experiences like gambling, sex, eating. All of these things are ways that we can numb out, even television. Even many people love to play the Xbox to excess, or watch DVDs to excess, things like that. So we can find the exit door numbing out in any number of ways. But this is quite a typical one that I see pretty routinely. In fact, there was one client I had who was struggling with sexual abuse issues in her girlhood. And her habit as a 45-year-old woman was to spend 4 to 6 hours a day watching these novellas on television, these kind of intense, campy, overly dramatic, you know, sagas that go on and on and on a daily basis. She would get lost in those. She would check out in those. She would numb out through those. So that's the first exit door, is numbing out. And then the next one is anger and aggression, where basically the mechanism at work here is blame. So we get lonely, we get anxious, we get stressed, we feel helpless, we feel hopeless, we feel depressed, things like that. We'll blame somebody for that. Some person, place, or thing can receive the blame. They'll become the object of blame for those feelings. And then it's very easy to become angry and aggressive towards a person that you blame, or an institution that you blame. And you can get lost in that anger and that aggression, persecuting that person, place, or thing for their injustice. I see people do this quite frequently. And when they learn how to slow down long enough, they begin to see how they played a very serious part in their own misery, how they played a very serious role in whatever situation caused them to feel so depressed and reactive. Anger and aggression are almost never very wise emotions and behaviors to engage with. They do not accomplish anything. They are mostly counterproductive. And through the process of psychotherapy, this becomes rather clear to clients. The last door is materialism, excessive materialism. Craving and seeking, desiring. And we have a particular problem with this one in the United States, as we're a very wealthy culture and civilization. And we numb out by buying things quite a bit. There's that cliched term of retail therapy. That's a rather obvious example, but a good one still, that most people can relate to. If you've had a bad day at work, or if your boyfriend has left you, or if your mother was just diagnosed with cancer, one thing that feels kind of good to do for a lot of us is to go to the mall and spend $300 on a pair of shoes, or whatever it might be. This is rather common. And there's nothing wrong with that, per se. But it becomes problematic when you're using that as a way to cope with emotions, when you're using it as a way to escape your own experience of life. Because there just are times in life when we are going to feel sad. There just are times in life where depression will arise, where grief is appropriate, and loss does occur. And we should be feeling that way. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing to fix. There's no problem. The trouble is, when we feel these things, most often, no matter what the cause or the stimulus, we believe that they're problematic feelings, that we shouldn't be feeling like that. And so we try and escape, kind of automatically, from depression and loss and grief and helplessness and hopelessness and all these things that periodically we are, in fact, supposed to be feeling. And all of these exit doors become habits. With numbing out in particular, most people are familiar with addiction to alcohol and substances. Those have physiological roots in being habits, but they also have neurological and psychological roots, very strong, powerful psychological mechanisms at work there for all of these exit doors. That they become habits. They become ways in which we become used to coping and exiting our own experience from. And after 20 or 30 years of these kind of afflictive, unhealthy habits being at play in someone's psychology, life begins to fall apart rather rapidly. And the earlier you can catch it, the better. The earlier you can learn that awareness is a good thing, the earlier you can learn that introspection is necessary, the earlier you can learn to abide with and explore your own psychological experience as a human being, to not be so afraid of depression, to not be so afraid of anxiety, to not be so terrified about the feeling of helplessness and hopelessness and loneliness and boredom. These things are a part of life. They're as much a part of life as any other feeling, happiness and joy. They are much a part of it as anything else. And so when we learn to stop being so reactive to everything that we think and feel that we label as bad or afflictive or negative, that we tell ourselves stories that I shouldn't be feeling this way, I should be feeling some other way, I'm special, it shouldn't be like this for me, that becomes a problem. And so then we systematically start teaching ourselves how to disconnect. We systematically start teaching ourselves how to shut off and shut down and numb out and blame and minimize and deny. And this cannot go to good places, as you can imagine. And the tools that exist in psychotherapy help clients understand the ways in which they might have been doing some of these things and how those unhealthy habits have affected their relationships, their work life, their home life, etc. And it gives them the necessary resources and tools to start undoing some of that, to start creating new habits. And this can be a very difficult process at times. Psychotherapy is not an easy kind of skipping through the woods process. It can be very intense, and it can be very difficult work. But what could possibly be more important than learning how to explore your own mental experience, learning how to create meaning in this human life that you have? What could possibly be more important than that? So I thank you for taking the time to listen to this. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it to be meaningful on some level. And I invite you, if you're a prospective client, to please contact me for a free consultation, either by phone or by email. Thanks a lot.